Joining us now, it's one of my favorites because we can go 100 different directions with him. From the Toronto Star, everyone's favorite follow on Twitter, it is Dave Festchuk. Good afternoon, Dave. Thanks for joining the show.
Mr. Cause, you're one of my favorites, too. Thanks for the kind introduction, and great to be speaking with you.
Ah, I love it. A little mutual admiration society going on here, which the audience obviously hates. Actually, I want to start in a different spot. I had a big picture Raptors question for you and Leafs and all that. But today being Bell Let's Talk Day, how different is the treatment of mental health in terms of how fans and media and also teams, organizations, how they view it? How different is the treatment of mental health in 2022 versus when you started in this business?
Oh, I mean, it's night and day. I mean, it was something that wasn't talked about when I started, and I'm, you know, I'm fairly old. I've been at it 20 plus years, Kaz, as you know. But I would say, look, let's give our mutual friend and colleague Michael Landsberg a lot of credit for normalizing the discussion around mental health in sports, at least in this market and around Canada. I think he did a lot to sort of, you know, make the dialogue a lot freer, make people feel a lot more empowered about discussing such things. And now you look at it, like the Maple Leafs have a player wellness department, right? The Maple Leafs didn't have that, you know, in the years before Landsberg was, you know, talking about mental health openly on Off the Record and other outlets. So I think it's a great thing. I hope it, you know, I hope it continues. I hope it doesn't just stop at where it is, because clearly, you know, you do hear stories about people not having access to care and not having really easy outlets for treatment. But let's hope that this is a great start. And in another 20 years, we're talking about a totally different landscape again.
Yeah. And I think like some of the difference, and one thing I said was that there's going to be people even now that when they hear Calvin Ridley stepping away for the year to deal with mental health, a great receiver for the Falcons, there's still going to be people that are going to go, what are you doing? You're being irresponsible, bad teammates, all that money you're getting paid, you're laying down the team, the franchise, and the fans. And when I hear that, I have two thoughts simultaneously. One is I kind of wish that was not the getting thrown out there. But the other side is I can still understand where that comes from, because I think it just is still going to take, and this is what's important about a day like today, it's still going to take a long time for people to understand and to connect that having serious issues with mental health is the same as having serious issues with your knee. And I think part of it is things like this, it just takes a long time for generations to catch up.
Yeah, oh, no doubt. It takes a long time. I mean, there's definitely, you know, there's definitely a generation gap there. I agree with you. And you still do hear people, you know, I shouldn't say here, but you see people roll their eyes a little bit around these discussions. People who, you know, it's that, I think Landsberg really put it well when he talks about how it's you know, mental health and those associated problems are sicknesses, not weaknesses. But there still are people that consider them weaknesses. And there still are people that consider athletes who, you know, are open enough and honest enough to come out and talk about those, they consider those athletes soft, you know. And that's wrong, but it's real. And I'm not sure when that changes or if it'll ever change completely. But I do think it's in some ways generational.
Yeah, it is. And that's why, like, I try not to get too angry at people that have that belief. I disagree with the belief. And what you just hope for is days like this destigmatizes mental health. And that really is the, you know, the important thing when it comes, like, one of the important reasons for today. And the good thing is, it's like, you just hear less of it. Like, if Calvin Ridley had done that when I started with Michael Landsberg in 2000, the conversation would have been, this guy is a quitter and a bad teammate. Today, right, that conversation is not like that at all.
No, exactly. And I mean, and you know, like even talking to executives and agents and coaches over the years, I mean, anybody that, you know, there was that always that go-to phrase, right, for a player who knows what those players were going through, but you'd hear it occasionally in an off-the-record conversation, not the TV show, but, you know, off-the-record, the journalistic term, oh, that guy's a head case, right? Head case was pretty common back in those days. Maybe it wasn't to do with mental health. It was to do with somebody who had, you know, emotional impulse problems, or somebody who just was mixed up in the wrong stuff when he should have been focused on trying to make a living as an athlete. But head case was a go-to term. It was an insensitive term. It was today it would be an unacceptable term. But, you know, again, that's that wasn't that long ago where it was definitely a common term. So I think we've come a long way since then, for sure.
Yes, 100%. 100%. Joined by Dave Feschuk from the Toronto Star. So, Dave, moving over to the Raptors for a second. Nick Nurse came out and said, you know, said yesterday that in the Raptors, you know, they beat Charlotte, they got the Bulls tonight, that making the playoffs, going for the playoff run, this is a big thing for the organization. It is a valuable resource for these players to get these players to be better and to help them grow. And I wonder for you, what do you think is more important, wins versus lottery balls? Last year's lottery balls that got you Scotty Barnes. And I bring this, I asked this question to you because you wrote a column last week about the Raptors being in the mushy middle, which is kind of where they are now. So what's more important, wins or lottery balls?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, I've been really thinking about this a lot, Kaz. And the more I think about it, I'm not sure where they're going with this whole development thing. Like, I get it. There's guys that are developing. Like, there's no doubt Fred VanVleet has developed, right? He's become a much better player since Kyle Lowry left, and he's been given the run of the team. You know, Pascal Siakam, he's developing nicely, or at least, you know, reemerging into the all-NBA type player we once knew him as. It took a leave of absence from our view for a while there during those couple of bad pandemic seasons. Scotty Barnes is obviously developing. We're watching, you know, a guy with star potential emerging in front of our eyes. And those are all great things. My problem with this plan, Kaz, and the idea that you might need more lottery balls before you can really bring this thing to fruition, is they just don't have enough guys. Like, they got the worst. This is the second year in a row, Kaz, where they have the worst bench in the NBA. And I like, as much as I love the core guys, and there's not, you know, there's nothing bad you can say about the core guys. They're playing crazy minutes. They're working their butts off. They're being used, and they're taking the opportunity that they're being afforded with all that playing time, and they're putting it to good use. As much as I love those guys, it's such a shallow pool of talent here that I just don't see how you're going to be able to proceed here without an injection of more talent. And for a team that kind of grew up in the Ujiri era, often being known for its bench mobs and for its depth and its supporting cast. And a supporting cast, by the way, that, you know, during the run to the championship had guys like Fred VanVleet coming off the bench, had guys like Siakam as the third option. And, you know, not to mention Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol as a tandem.
Norm Powell. And
exactly. And you think about the depth they had in those years. I just think they're going to need more depth, and I'm not sure where they're going to get it unless they're just stealing guys late in the draft, which is not always, you know, always difficult to do.
Yeah, no, it is, and there's only so much you can do in free agency. To me, this is one to keep going back and forth on. Like, would Siakam, Anunoby, and Scotty Barnes, how much more better will they get as players? How much would it positively accelerate their growth with them fighting and, say, getting the seventh seed, winning the play-in game, then losing in six in the first round? I don't know if there's I don't think there's an answer to it, but that's what I'm sort of going back and forth in my head about.
Yeah, no, it is. Look, it is the tough. It's the tough question, right? Like, right now, you're sitting there, you're in the eighth seed. Would you be better off? You're only, you know, you're a game and a half, two games and a half out of being out of the play-in, and would you be better off being out of the play-in? Hey, let's not forget, you know, last year, Masai Ujiri scoffed at the play-in. Remember his famous quote, play-in for what? And, you know, you can make that case this year. Play-in for what? What, to get Scotty Barnes a few playoff games that, as you point out, will likely end in a first-round defeat, or, hey, maybe a play-in defeat. Who knows? I'm not sure that, you know, the equation there works. I think you'd rather have the lottery talent in the long run than those handful of games, or maybe one game, if it turns into the play-in, you would get by playing in the playoffs or the play-in. So I'm with you. Like, it is a tough call, because I do think, like, doing it, tanking's getting you nowhere. Like, the Orlando Magic are not poised to become a power anytime soon, and all the lottery balls in the world aren't going to change that this year, next year, or the year after, right? You got to have players. I think Ujiri understands you can't tear it down to the studs. But they're in that mushy middle, as I termed it, where, you know, the road to the next destination, it's not a clear path.
No, it isn't. Actually, you know what? I'm thinking about this. You mentioned Masai Ujiri playing for what? So that's on one side. On the other side, his head coach is playing his guys more minutes than anyone else. Yeah. I wonder how Masai Ujiri feels about Van Vliet being like number one, Barnes being eight, Siakam being somewhere between one and eight. You know, like I wonder how he feels about that.
Well, look, coaches and GMs and presidents see things differently. We are that you don't have to be a genius to understand that. Nick Nurse is in the here and now, wants to win every possession, wants to win every minute of every quarter. Never wants to give up an inch out there. And therefore, you see Fred VanVleet lead the league in the minutes and on the rest of those guys that you mentioned up there very high in an era of load management. I think it's like most things with executives. I think Masai Ujiri's fine with it, but how will he feel if Fred VanVleet gets hurt because of it? How will he feel if Scottie Barnes gets hurt because of it? There are those who believe you shouldn't play young guys as much as the Raptors are playing Scottie Barnes right now. There are also those, and maybe it's generational, who believe, play him 82, play him as long as you can play him. The better players want to play more, and they play better when they play more. So I do think there's an argument for both sides. I will say this about the Raptors, though, Kaz. Like, I've been given a bit of a glimpse behind the curtain in some of their, player metrics in terms of load measurement, not load management, but load measurement. They've got these GPS systems that the players wear in practice. They know a lot more about how tired these guys are, how much work these guys have put in than we know. And yeah. I got to trust that their sports science department believes that they can take what they're taking right now. Otherwise, I think that's a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, certainly they deserve the benefit of the doubt. All right, Dave Feschuk from the Toronto Star, are you ready for the hardest question that I think I can ask you, sports perspective? I got some ones about religion and life philosophy that might be trickier.
But that was like rosé or red or,
What's the food pairing? What time of year is it? What red are we drinking? I mean, is it a light Gamay? Anyway, I could go on like that, but I already sound like so much like a D-bag. Can you explain to me how there's over 500 NHL players who've drawn more penalties, even strength, than Austin Matthews?
Yeah, certainly I can. I mean,
Okay, go.
Well, here I go. Okay.
Yeah.
Look, Austin Matthews, in some ways, is probably a victim of being a horse, right? Like, he's a great athlete who's as strong on your skates as you could be strong on skates, who's got a big, solid frame, who is not knocked off his feet, off the puck, off his stride very easily, doesn't seem to have that diving gene that some players just naturally have, right? So I think that's a big part of it. I also think, the Maple Leafs as a group in a league where referees tend to call one penalty on one team and then one penalty on the opposing team, and they tend to balance those things out. The Maple Leafs en masse just do not drop penalties. They all play a way that does not generally put them anywhere near the top of the power play minutes, right? They're often near the bottom of power play time on ice because of it. And so I think it's also like it's guilt by association. Like the Leafs are known as a fairly soft team that doesn't, go to the places you need to go on a regular basis to draw those penalties. And I do think that reputational aspect of it, because referees are human, is also playing a factor here.
Yeah, it's so basically what you're saying is it a combination that he's got to get maybe a little bit tougher, dirtier, and also maybe channel his inner James Harden a little bit.
Yeah, you got to dive a little bit if you're going to get calls, right?
I hate that. I hate that.
I hate it too, but referees are human, and I'm one of the few guys you'll hear that has a lot of time for referees. I think it's a tough vocation. Yeah. I think it's sad what's happened to the way society kind of craps on referees in all sports. And yeah, I know a little bit about, the problems trying to get people to become referees now at the grassroots level. Like, not a lot of kids want to become referees because parents go at them in minor hockey leagues and minor basketball leagues and minor soccer pitches. And it's disgusting to me. Like, there's no respect for referees. But I will say this, they're human and they can be tricked. And the best players who draw the most penalties, they trick them occasionally, Kaz.
Yeah, no, they do. We see it over and over. I leave you with this, Dave. What for you was your biggest takeaway? And maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's like, Sheldon keeps experimenting. It's the last time he's going to be able to do it all year. Did you have any sort of big picture takeaway of what we're going to see tonight on the lines for the Leafs, where Nylander, Matthews, and Marner are all on separate lines?
No, I think Sheldon Keefe loves experimenting. I think that's a great thing. I wish, you know, if I'm a Leaf fan, I wish he would have experimented, switching up the lines as they were coughing up 3-1 series lead to the Montreal Canadiens last summer or last spring, whenever that was, in the first round again, because I don't think he was particularly experimental in that moment, and I think it hurt them. Certainly with the slump that Matthews and Marner were going through at the time, he didn't do much to shake it up. Maybe they were just overwhelmed by the moment. But look, I think it's a long season. You gotta find ways to motivate and instigate and kind of maybe infuriate your team a little bit if you're a coach. And I think Sheldon Keefe is smart to do that here, because even though it feels like it's been going a long time, cause you know the playoffs don't start essentially until May, right? We're going deep into April this year before we get to a playoff game. And I do think you need to kind of have some different looks out there to keep everybody interested, including the fans.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And I did wonder, is this line change experiment for tonight's game against the Ducks, how much of it is because of Matthews and Marner getting shut down in that playoff series against Montreal? Dave, always a pleasure. Everyone, I say it all the time, I'm going to say it again. Go out and buy a copy of the Toronto Sun. And the great thing, especially, I'm up here to Cottage. I read the entire paper, and then afterwards, it's kindling. I use every part of the paper from start to finish.
Cause it's always an experience, always educational. I'm going to leave you with one thing, and you can explain it to your listeners. Like, the one thing that blew my mind the other day, I was playing a game of Trivial Pursuit, and I found out that something called not red, not white, but orange wine exists.
Yes.
And
yes.
I was not aware of this, and it blew my mind.
I will just say this. Orange wine, it's basically about just how long you keep the juices in contact with the skins. It's overrated. Okay, there is good stuff out there. Southbrook Winery, they do good orange wine, but it's a little bit of a novelty. It's a hipster drink. It's not here for the long haul.
I didn't know it was rated, let alone overrated. But thank you for the
scouting report. Overrated. Thanks so much, Dave.
Okay, guys.